Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, big shout out to Paul in Wyoming. Thank you for your PayPal donation, Paul. I don't get a lot of PayPal donations anymore. Most people do Patreon, but hey, PayPal donation. That's great, man. That's great. And I don't take it for granted. Absolutely not. Totally appreciate that, Paul. We got Doc McGee. Can you believe that? Doc McGee is on the Talking Metal podcast. A guy I've been a fan of because I'm a fan of the bands he's worked with. Some of my favorite bands, Motley Crue and Bon Jovi back in the day. We all knew who Doc McGee was because he was the manager behind these bands. I mean, there aren't a lot of rock and roll managers that we know, who they are. Well, I mean, what, like Elvis's manager was a Colonel Parker or something? Peter Grant, you know. Maybe Brian Epstein, the Beatles, and Doc McGee, right? I mean, Doc McGee. Oh, my God. I can't believe we scored this. A big thanks to my friend Ian McCurdy for helping hook it up. Or not helping, hooking it up. Thank you, Ian. You made this happen, and I never take for granted the people you help book on this podcast. You've done quite a few of them through the years, and I never take for granted your friendship. You're an awesome dude. Love Ian McCurdy. And let's just mention, I returned to concerts this week. You know, I was supposed to see the Eagles back in August, and we got hit by the hurricane, and they had to delay the show by a few days, which gave me an out. And, you know, I was kind of, even though I'm vaccinated, I was kind of like, well, the Delta variant, you know, it's kind of high back in August, mid-August. So we had an out, so I got my money back on those. But Megadeth hit last week here in PNC Art Center outdoors. Loved it. Fun. Maybe a little weird, you know, going back to shows. I don't know. I'd say there's maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people there. That's a guess. Lamb of God. Wow. No disrespect towards Megadeth, but Lamb of God is a hard band to follow. They're so freaking good live. But Megadeth, short but sweet set. I mean, left them wanting more. I guess I would say that. It was definitely a short set by Megadeth, but they gave you what you wanted. You know, and they didn't do In My Darkest Hour. I kind of missed that a little bit, but what they did give us was great. Some really great classic Megadeth tunes. And Lamb of God kicked my ass, as usual. Then, 2 days later, I see Pearl Jam at the See Here Now Festival, a festival founded and run by my friend Tim Donnelly. He's one of the co-founders, I guess I'd say, co-producers. And wow, what a night and day this was. Jesus, 35,000 people on this beach, on the shore, on the sand at Asbury Park watching Pearl Jam play their first show in 3 years. It was emotional. It was great. I personally wish they played a lot of new stuff, which I get because they haven't had a chance to play songs off their new record. But I could have done with maybe just two less new songs and two more classics. But no complaints, because it was a spiritual, magical night on the Jersey Shore. Listen, I'm a big Pearl Jam fan. I know some metalheads maybe don't love Pearl Jam, but I do. And some metalheads do because, they have some aggressive, loud songs. But it was a great night. And 35,000 people, folks, vaccinated only, or you could provide your, you know, test that was taken within the last 48 hours to show that you were negative of the COVID virus. So, yeah, just a really fun night. My mic cut out there for a minute. I'm not sure what happened. Hopefully, I'm going to edit it together. Hopefully, you won't even notice. Just a really fun night watching Pearl Jam play. Truly enjoyed it. And, wow, just looking forward to more concerts. And, you know, I said this to Doc during the interview. I think it's time that people start opening things back up. And it's not going to be like, you know, we're all jumping in the pool at once. I get that. I used to think, you know, a month into this, 2 months into this, what has it been, 18 months now? I was like, yeah, one day, you know, the light's just going to turn back on and everything's going to be great. And now that's not how it's happening. It's going to be a gradual thing because different people have different levels of comfort. I can say that after these two concerts, I'm kind of there. I'm kind of ready. I got Ministry next month. I want to go see Kiss. I want to do the Vegas residency. My wife and I went out to that in 2014 and had such a blast. Want to go back, I think, for the Kiss Vegas residency. You know, we'll see. As long as we don't get some other crazy mutation of this COVID thing, I think this could be the last hurrah of this Delta wave that's now declining. And we're seeing numbers in this country drop day after day after day. I feel good about things. Let's continue to be smart and safe, guys. But I pray we're coming out of this. If I feel hopeful, I hope you guys do. Let me know. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you think. And let's get into our interview with Doc McGee right now on Talking Metal. Then I'll come back and give you all my socials and wrap things up. Okay, here we go. What an honor. The one, the only, Doc McGee. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and what an honor to be talking to one of the most famous rock and roll managers of all time, truly, Doc McGee. Doc, how are you, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good, Mark. How are you doing, bud?
I'm good. I want to check in with you and see how the tour is going. It's back on. Paul and Gene are both fully recovered, I assume?
Yes, both Gene and Paul are truly recovered and in good form. And we've done a couple of shows, and it's, you know, there's a lot of shit out there. So we, you know, unfortunately, this all came from home before we even got out there. So it just, which most of the stuff happens. And, you know, we have all the CDC protocols and everything in place. And Gene and Paul are the only two that got sick, but now they're fine. Gene hardly had any symptoms at all. And Paul had some fever and stuff, but Gene, he said if he didn't test positive, he wouldn't have known he was positive.
Right on, right on. We've heard a lot of that. Asymptomatic, right?
Exactly. He's, you know, and that's what he, that's what vaccinations, I guess, do for you.
Well, I'm glad that they're back out there because I know maybe some people aren't quite ready to rock, but others are. And somebody's got to open the door back up to live music. So props to you guys for doing that.
Well, we think it's important. We think it's important if you're just careful and do what you're going to do and you're hopefully vaccinated and I only say that because I'm not one of those vax freaks or anything. It's just that it seems to, from what we've seen firsthanded.
Doc? Oh, lost you there for a second, Doc. Hello, Doc.
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah, you cut out there for a second, but you were just saying from what you've seen firsthand, the vaccines work, I guess, is what you were saying.
Yeah, it seems like if you're vaccinated, at least the two people we've had come in contact with and one other person we had come in contact with it that were vaccinated had, you know, fever symptoms, but that was it. And it was over in a couple of days. And so, and it doesn't prolong anymore. I mean, at least, you know, even with the CDC, from the time that you get a symptom, it's 10 days and you're back to work. So, right, and you know, and if you're, hopefully if you're vaccinated or you have a strong immune system, it knocks it out, just like the flu did, you know, just like when you were sick and you catch the flu and you, but now it's a lot worse if you don't, if you're not vaccinated or whatever. So.
Right on. Well, through the last year, it's been a rough year for us music fans and Kiss fans, but you gave us the Dubai concert, which was just great. You also gave us the A&E special, which again, wow, this was such an amazing watch for Kiss fans. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how that all came about. Can you fill us in on that all coming about and ending up on A&E, which is actually where I work. I work at A&E.
Well, the documentary it originally was supposed to have been done 2 years ago. Okay. And so, would coincide with the start of the End of the Road tour. So it was supposed to come and launch the, or help launch the End of the Road tour to make people understand a little more about Kiss stuff that you don't know. I mean, it's like, when, you know, when I watch the Eagles or I watch another artist documentary, I always find shit that I didn't know about them, you know, or I wanted to know about them, and then I get excited and I want to go see them. So that was the idea, but it didn't come to fruition, and there was a lot of problems with the production company, and so therefore we ended up putting it off and doing it all through the pandemic, and then. Who knew that we were going to have the pandemic? So now it's almost the same way as it was supposed to be. Okay.
Right.
Because it comes out and now we're back touring again and we'll finish up next year.
Right on. And it's just an amazing watch. And one thing we heard rumored about, speaking of television, is I guess what I'd call a scripted Kiss show, or I wouldn't call it documentary, like dramaization or something. Is that something that's in the works?
Yes, we have. Actually, we have a script that's completely done. Mark Canton, who is a very, very powerful producer and production company, who has the TV series Power and Ghost and all that stuff. And he was the president of Sony and all that. He's done 300 films. A really, really great guy. His team and Universal Music and ourselves have partnered up with Joachim Ronen, who is a director, who's a very sought after director that did things like Pirates of the Caribbean and Contiki was up for Academy Award. And the script is about the first 4 years of Kiss. It's basically, it's before the Zeros, all the, before they were famous, it was up to Cadillac High, that kind of thing.
Right.
And and I think it's a very interesting look at the formation of Kiss, the mindset of how that came about, the social pressure that everybody was in the 60s and 70s that came in, that brought something like Kiss to the forefront that could actually happen. So it's a very interesting, and I think it's a well-written movie. And our partners right now is Netflix, but we'll see. It would be a theatrical release and then Netflix.
Wow! So, very exciting. And are you casting already? Is casting?
We haven't started casting yet. We're finishing our deal with a couple of distributors, Europe and U.S., and then we will get into casting. I believe before Thanksgiving will be in the casting.
Right on. Wow. Very exciting. And Doc, I want to get into your history a little bit. Can we talk about how you got involved in the music business originally?
You know, something it's people always think that, you know, like, well, you must have been a guitar player or you were, you know, somehow connected. And I was at an early age at 16, 17 and 18. I played in a band and had a record deal, but nothing big. You know, we had a singles deal at Mercury back then. That's all you had was singles. You know, after the Army, I moved to Florida and literally I was waiting tables. I was doing whatever I could to get on the treadmill and make a living, you know? And
right.
When I went back to Chicago, in 74, we went after Florida, you know, I was just like selling cars and stuff. And my sister introduced me to this guy, Bob Sterling, who was doing Goodbye Norma Jean, The Story of Marilyn Monroe, and Winter Kills, and was a real music guy. And he knew I played music. And anyways, we hit it off. And he said, would you want to help me do all my music stuff? I said, sure. And that's how it started, really.
Wow. Wow. And you went on in the 80s, the first time I remember hearing about you, when you were working with Bon Jovi. And I was a big fan, still am, of Bon Jovi. I wanted to ask you about that time before they really became a household name, before you broke them. I mean, I remember seeing them before Slippery When Wet came out, and right. You know, they were opening for Rat at, you know, on an arena tour. Rat. But then it was like 2 years, or not even a year later, they came back through where I lived at the time, Chicago, and like sold out the Chicago Pavilion two nights in a row, you know? So it was like, yeah. It's such a transition that year. Can you talk at all about pre Slippery When Wet and where the band was at,
sure.
Where you were at and how you broke them?
Well, you know, it's, you know, people, first of all, like to say that I broke people. Okay. I think my role is really, I think I empower them and get them to be better at what they do and put them in situations that they can shine. So, but they're very talented people all the way around in their own fields before that. So with that said, John and gang, you know, we had done two albums at the time, and we had done, you know, the Bon Jovi record and then the first record. And then we did 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit. And I still don't know what the fuck that was. But anyways, it was a record that was kind of a rock record, but not a rock record.
Yeah.
Kind
of In and Out of Love, just, man. I like that song, In and Out of Love, right?
Well, no, it was, there was some, you know, there was some different, the reason why Bon Jovi, I think, just started to evolve is because they were starting to play with rock bands. So they were playing with Kisses, they were playing with Scorpions, they were playing with Rat, they were playing with different bands that were harder in the sense of a harder sound than what Johnny was used to, with Southside Johnny and Springsteen and all that stuff from Jersey Shore. So as the bands with Tico and Richie and Dave and Al, they just, that rhythm section was so good and so tight that it just kind of morphed into this rock band, because they were just, you know, that's what Richie and Tico came from Frankie and the Knockouts, and Richie came from Richie Sambora and Friends, and, you know, he was all, you know, he's a really good guitar player and a really good writer. So Johnny and Richie became really great writers together. So after that period of not understanding, Johnny wasn't coming from a great place during 7,800 degrees. So he had broke up with his girlfriend. He was having problems with, you know, he broke up with Dorothea, and they've been together for 100 years. Okay. And so there, you know, he was having troubles with that and just wasn't being accepted as much in the music scene as maybe he would have liked to, or any of us would have liked to.
Right.
During that 1983 through 1986, a period of time. And then when, we got off the Kiss tour and came back, and Johnny and Richie started to work with Desmond, and then, they wanted to make a fun rock record. And, with no expectations of that this was going to be monstrous, that this was going to be, you know, man, or any of that shit, just a great rock record, which we did in 6 weeks in a cloud of dust in Vancouver with, you know, Bruce Fairburn and Bob Rock. And just, we walked in, we knew all the songs, we knew all the arrangements, we knew everything we were going to do. Amen. Born. And that changed his world, changed everybody's world.
Right on. All right. You cut out just a little bit at the end there, Doc. You said you walked in with all the songs.
We walked in with all the songs, and we walked in with the arrangements and everything that we were going to do. It's actually 6 weeks of a cloud of dust. And we just came in to make a fun record and not overthink anything. And it just came out as Slippery When Wet, which was, just changed everybody's life,
Absolutely. Including the people listening to it, like myself, such a great record.
I think those songs, kind of dictate the time. They mean a lot to people in several generations of people now. Definitely. Starts to move people. So yeah, it was a very important record for the Bon Jovi band and for myself.
Moscow Peace Festival was something that you put together, and even to this day, how hard was it to make that happen, to work with the Russian government specifically in making that happen? I can imagine that wasn't easy, or was it?
I don't think I'd have the stomach to do it again, because it was an idea that was put together, and then it's kind of like, well, that's what my life is. See, I make shit up and then I have to do it. Okay, which is a lot of times you got to wonder, why did I say anything? But, my job is to find tipping points. Okay. Things that move people's careers, move things around the world, not to see if they can get them on radio or see if you can get them. My stuff I have to do is to change people's lives forever in certain instances, not every day, but as many times as I can. And this was a very big tipping point. This was doing a show to the Soviet Union that never allowed a rock band to ever play in the Soviet Union, ever. Okay. To where you couldn't play guitars, electric guitars. You could play acoustic guitars. You could do a Billy Joel. You could do something like that, a Beach Boys kind of thing in Warsaw, Poland or something in the 60s. But in Moscow, you're not playing Moscow. Okay. And they were putting kids in jail for listening to Ozzy Osbourne and Scorps and Skids and Bon Jovi. They were literally putting people in jail at the time. But with Perestroika, with Gorbachev, with this Perestroika, gave me a window that I thought we could get in there and do it. I didn't realize that it was just going to be an ass whipping to try to do anything in the Soviet Union. Right. But at the end of the day, it was the first rock and to ever be on television in the Soviet Union, and in 11 time zones. We have 3 time zones. They have 11. Wow. We were the first rock band to ever be played on Soviet television. We're the first ones to ever play in Moscow or to play anywhere. We did 300,000 people in 2 days in Lenin Stadium, and the people were unbelievably gracious and friendly. And this was their kind of, you say Woodstock, but this is like, if you're a baseball fan and all you got to do was listen to the radio and listen to baseball games and imagine what a baseball game looked like. Right, now you got to see it.
See it, right,
A baseball game, you'd be pretty blown away. So that's right. Basically what it was for that whole, 11 time zones. So it was, did we know that it was going to affect the world the way it affected the world? Or did we know that being this part of it would be an instrumental part in the change of the world? No, we didn't have any idea that was going to happen. It just happened to be the timing. And Gorbachev told me he didn't say no. And that's how we got it done. Okay. And I think that that's the truth, because nobody said yes. We didn't have one permit to go into the Soviet Union. I thought we were going to be arrested when we landed. I was actually hoping that we'd be arrested landing on the runway, because that way I didn't have to do the show.
Yeah.
And it'd be an international incident and we'd be out of there.
Right.
But we ended up, you know, landing, you know, magic bus to Moscow, landing and on the runway, getting out and doing a press conference on the runway in Moscow, which you couldn't do if you were in Des Moines, Iowa. Okay. Much less, you know, New York or LA, you know, but we did it right on the runway, and they were very appreciative of what we had done and what we had brought to the Russian culture and the Russian kids. They were very, 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 very happy.
Yeah.
So it was tough, but everything you do is tough. So you just go do it, I guess.
Right on, right on. A couple more questions before I let you go, Doc. You guys did on Sirius XM, it was like a limited run Kiss channel. And, you know, we have the Pearl Jam channel, Ozzy's Boneyard, and the Beatles channel, and the Jimmy Buffett channel. Any chance we could get a permanent Kiss station on Sirius XM? Because for us Kiss fans, that would be just incredible.
Well, you know something, we've talked about it. And one thing that we don't want to do is what everybody else has done, okay? And it's very, very limited on what Kiss does on the channel. It's pretty much programmed by XM and people, you know, that program it. And it doesn't really represent Kiss as well as I would like it to. So if we change that concept, and I believe we will in the future, where we can be more active and more engaged in it,
right,
then yes, we will do a channel. But until we can, till we can control and engage it the correct way, we won't.
Right. Fair enough. And the last Kiss concert ever of the End of the Road tour, is that something you guys currently are planning, that specific date, a location, what it actually will be? Is that something that's currently in the works, in the planning stages?
Yes, it certainly is. You know, we were supposed to end this year, actually, in July, but because of the COVID and stopping us from doing the touring, set us back a year and a half. So it looks like the last show of Kiss, as you know it, with Gene and Paul, will be sometime at the end of next year.
Okay.
We don't have a locked-in date yet because of what's going on. It's very difficult to get for people to hold dates, because we don't even know if you're going to be able to play. You know, so we're trying to hold dates. Everybody's holding dates, but it will be next year. And you know, we want to get through what we said. We wanted the guys wanted to play to everybody, and meant, we'll go to your town, big or small. You know, we're not the red carpet band that you have to come out. We've always been the people's band, in the sense that, you know, the Kiss Army and that supported us for all these years, we go to all the little towns to play.
Right on.
You know, to see everybody. Shit, it's been 50 years with these guys.
Hello, Doc.
Yeah, I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, losing you again. But you said it, 50 years with these guys, and yeah, I know they always play like Fort Wayne, Indiana. They play Trenton, New Jersey, even Lake Placid, New York. Yeah,
come and see us. That's what we're supposed to do.
Right.
We just don't do stadiums where you go there and you have a shitty seat and you can't see anybody and you can't, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Listen, do we make money? Yeah, we make money. Everybody makes money. But one thing we do, We if you paid $150 for a ticket or $20 for a ticket, you got a $300 show or a $50 show. You know, it's
right.
We spend a lot of money on our show because we, you know, hey, listen to us. That's what KISS is. You know, right. KISS is the band that you want to go see. Now, maybe you might not like the music as much as you like other people's music or songs or whatever. And, but you will come and see the show because it's, I think it's a must see.
Absolutely. It always is. It's always just for me, a religious experience, my favorite band, and, cannot wait to see them again. You got the Vegas dates coming up. I'm thinking of heading out for those. The final date on the website right now is July of 2022, but you're saying the final concert would be towards the end of 2022. Can we assume there would be more dates in the back half of 2022? Yeah.
Yes, there will be, because we have to make up a bunch of shows that we couldn't do. Plus we have a whole little run of some special stuff that we want to do. And, you know, it's hard to end a career. Nobody really wants to go away. Okay. Right. They all say they do. But, you know, again, it's like, you know, it's like Brady, you know, at some point he's going to say, I don't want to be the old guy on the field. I want to leave when I'm on top. And that's what, you know, that's the way Gene and Paul feel, you know.
Absolutely.
So they want it. They're not just quitting because, and they're spending time, you know, a lot of time away from their family, but the KISS Army is their family. So they've spent more time with
Doc, losing you again, but
yeah, is that any better?
Yeah, okay. There you go. But anyways, it's just been a true honor speaking with you, and a big thanks to you for taking some time out of your day to talk to the Talking Metal listeners. Thanks to Ian McCurdy for connecting us. I appreciate that connection. And please be well.
You got to be safe out there.
Once again, a big thanks to Doc McGee for joining us. Legendary man. Wow. Epic. Ian McCurdy. Thank you. Lynn, Doc's right hand. She is amazing and helped hook this interview up too. So big thanks to her. And a big thanks to everyone who supports me on Patreon. I usually read the names at the beginning of the show. This time we're doing it at the end of the show. But you guys, I never take the support you give me for granted. I hope you like the bonus podcast I do exclusively for you 50 people on Patreon. Hope you're enjoying your Talking Metal t-shirts. And your support on Patreon means the world to me. Please consider joining us there, guys. Join great folks like Nick Beach down in Australia. Hope you got your t-shirt, Nick. Mrs. Metal Dan, Sam Warwick, Kedo Yogova, Adrian Cusick, Dane Damage, Madison Hatter, Seth B., Alan Janssen, Hank Reeves of Dash Vodka, John Simpson, Huckney Jacobson, Ed Ferguson, Denny Striegel, Patrick Sabin, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Blue Walsh 21, Victor Guzman, Gene, Eugene DX, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Andrew Miller, Jeremy Weltman, Chris Riley, Johan Erdestrom, Steven Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo Shaben, Brad Dahl, Dan Gerwan, Victor M. Ruiz, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Stephen Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blah, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Stephen Hoker, John Bovary, Metal Dan. Is that it? Yeah, that's it. We lost somebody. I'm not sure who we lost, but there used to be, let's see, who do we lose? Somebody cancel? David Guntner canceled. Oh, goodbye, David. And John Barron's credit card is not going through. Oh, well. All right, guys. Thank you for your support. Later.